Around the NFL podcast. It's recognized by no one in the United States.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler,
Nick Shook. Yeah, you heard me.
And Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
This is me. Hey, Dan. I mean, you don't have to just try to take his spot or his role.
Hey, but it's been done.
And he's not going to let go. This is definitely going to be a Colin Kaepernick replacing Alex Smith type scenario, potentially.
Oh, brewing, Dan.
I'm just saying, because Nick, and you just heard that he jumped in with the hey, Dan, he's got the eye of the tiger.
I mean, let's be honest.
Mark with a C.
Thank you. Wes is, you know, out having a very important minor procedure today. We wish him well. And the idea that he would be
post-cancer upkeep.
Yeah, that he would be benched like during what a thing we'd all feel sympathetic towards him.
You feel sympathetic for Alex Smith when he suffered a brain injury?
Yes, I did.
When his team was surging like this team, and then the new guy came in, the younger guy, the buffer guy. And then just went nuts. I'm not saying I want it to happen. I'm just throwing it out there.
The fans and the NFL get so angry about it, it becomes more of a Colin Kaepernick getting boycotted from the NFL.
So that version of Colin Kaepernick.
Scenario.
I was going to say.
Shook can't even do desk shifts anymore.
I don't want to be completely shut out here.
Yeah. Well.
Staying outside.
Well, then just sit in for today's show. And we thank you for all your help all season, and you're helping us out again today, Nick. And nothing it matters. We're gonna get into week 16, all the games, but I don't care. The only thing I care about is the tweet that came out. Nerdist.com put together an expert study of podcast popularity. And you heard at the top of the show that comment about the United States who doesn't care about our pocket. Well, how about this? According to Nerdist.com, and this is indisputable, the results here.
No, naturally.
The most popular podcast in the state of Rhode Island.
Well, let's think.
There's a place for everyone. Rhode Island's it for me. Rhode Island, Rhode Island, surrounded by the sea. Some people roam the earth for home. Rhode Island.
The Around the NFL podcast, the most popular podcast in Rhode Island, according to the celebrated podcast website, Nerdist.com. Eat it.
I have two questions here.
Yeah.
How does one become an expert on podcast popularity? And how many counties are in Rhode Island?
I don't know, but I do have Rhode Island fun facts for you. Did you know it's the home, Greg, to the Tennis Hall of Fame?
Yeah. They did. Haven't been, but
pretty good, right?
Newport. Also, they have a small tournament.
That's funny you bring up Newport, because it's the first circus in the United States was held in Newport.
Great jazz festival. I feel like Tamposi deserves some credit here. I know she's from New Hampshire, but it's like, what's the difference?
There is a massive difference between them.
I'm saying
New England's kind of like.
I mean, for real. I'm not even. I'm serious. She's bringing in the locals.
It's quite a stretch.
Are there like state rivalries there?
No, New England, we sort of all kind of keep ourselves together. You know, I almost went to the University of Rhode
Tamposi's
Island, too.
Tamposi's from New Hampshire. It's much more, like, in much of Rhode Island is much more Boston than Western Massachusetts, where I'm from. It's all like, you know, give me a break.
You would think all of my hatred over the years toward the Patriots would actually lead to maybe lesser numbers, but I guess they enjoy the suffering that the Patriots have rained down on me until this season. Also, one other reason why I think we connect, Mark, with Rhode Island, it never ratified the 18th Amendment prohibition.
No.
They said no.
I like that. Like, we're out by the sea. We do what we want to do. We're not signing up for your hideous laws that try to truncate fun. Let's draw boundaries around
song
us.
Again. That was good. We have so much to get to.
There's a place for everyone. Rhode Island is for me. Rhode Island, oh Rhode Island, surrounded by the sea. Some people roam the earth for home. Rhode Island is for me.
Great
song. When I learned to drive, when I got a license when I was 16 or so back then, like, took a road trip. Rhode Island is very close to where I grew up, and like, on the way back. Well, this was shut up, Erica. There were no maps back then. Like, there was no like phone map. I got so lost that I did not get home till like 4:30 in the morning.
Interesting.
Some hideous highway.
Surprising, because it's a state that only covers 1,214 square miles.
It's wild to consider that we managed to colonize and then move all the way west across America with no maps. Mm.
And it's funny that you mentioned colonize, because Rhode Island was the final colony of the original 13. All right. Great state. My favorite state. I always knew I liked that state. Now I know for sure. I have a reason for it. Let's get to the games. We'll start with the Saturday games. The Washington Redskins, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, their season ended when Alex Smith broke his leg, and it was starting to trend in the wrong direction even before that. I'm a little surprised. It's a little bit – maybe this is where Wes would have jumped in, no offense, Shook, and been excited about this Rhode Island thing, but a muted response overall, I feel. The number one podcast in that whole state.
I think we're humble. We're like looking to get 49 other states on that list.
Right. Greg, you seem almost angry.
Greg is annoyed. I know why Greg's annoyed. I'm going to tell you right now.
Why? Yeah.
Because calling it the most popular podcast in Rhode Island is not technically what the Nerdist was claiming. And Greg was all over this.
I actually only checked that because you asked, Dan asked the question on Twitter.
But you were like,
I read the article. Yeah. And they said,
and he was holding back from trying to rain on the parade with more factual nuance to what we presented.
What do you even mean? You're right. I could give two shits about that.
Well, you've got a whole nother podcast that you care about more. So
are you debunking this award?
No, I'm not debunking it.
I'm surprised Greg held up this long before bringing the rain. This is the true rainmaker, right here.
I think it's fine. I mean, it's good. I read it was a strange way they measured it. It was just like, which state are you more popular in compared to all other states? So it wasn't necessarily, yeah. But that's cool too. That the road, it means the same thing.
That's still positive news.
Yeah, the Rhode Island people love us.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, this is the New England area. You're carrying this podcast right now.
Right.
That's you.
I just figured like there's only like 17
breaking
people
news.
That live in Rhode Island that this news is exciting to.
We have a bunch of game previews to get to.
Yeah, let's move on with this thing.
The Washington Redskins, they won 16-13 over the Jaguars and with a bunch of other teams in the wild card picture losing, with the Dallas Cowboys losing. All of a sudden, 7-7 with two to play gives you a faint pulse. And now they travel to Tennessee to face the Titans. Mark Sessler. This is a Titans team that's been impossible to figure out all season. But one thing we do know for sure, three straight wins, including their last two victories by a 47-9 margin. Are you now believing in this Tennessee outfit in the final weeks of the regular season?
I mean, they've been hyper streaky. I like that the old Titans team of old, we thought was just going to run the ball 30 times a game and try to beat you up physically with their offensive line and their power sets and multiple tight ends and just, you know, squeeze the life out of you. And over the last two games, and I realized that game against the Giants last week, there was a weather aspect to that as well. But the split for Derrick Henry is simply unbelievably insane. 408 yards and 6 touchdowns in his last two games. Before that, 474 yards and 5 touchdowns all season. So a very...
He's got hot.
They're hot. It isn't just a fluke, too. I know he had the long run against the Jaguars, but their offensive line put it to the Giants last week to the point where even Marcus Mariota on one play threw a killer block to take out a Giants defender.
It was fine. I mean, come on.
Whoa.
Well, for a quarterback, he leveled him.
Whoa, don't downplay this.
Fine.
This was awesome.
Well, you're not a Titans guy, so this is not a good development for you. But
the Titans put out his favorite team, the Giants, last week. So
yes,
still,
exactly.
Still
they have a little bit of identity, and they're playing the Redskins at the right time. The Redskins have allowed 400 yards rushing over the last 2 weeks and 130 on the ground in 6 of the last 7 games. So it's good timing, and if they beat the Redskins and if they ever found a way to knock off the Colts next week, according to the New York Times whole analytical business, they have a 95% chance of making the playoffs. So
they just basically need the Ravens or the Steelers to lose one game between the two of them, too, along with
possible.
That. Very possible. They're also a team that seems capable of being in the fourth quarter of this game and it being way too close against Josh Johnson. I mean, Josh Johnson winning last week, a game on the road, it's kind of one of the more amazing things that's happened in the NFL this year. For real. I mean, this Redskins team, like the Browns didn't win a game, period, last year. Josh Johnson just went and won one. And I don't know, this Titans team just seems capable of anything. Like, I want this to be like an ugly game that actually means something in the fourth quarter, and you start thinking, like, could the Redskins actually enter week 17 with a pulse? But they're going to be without Jordan Reed. He's out. Monte Nicholson, their safety, was put on injured reserve this week. There's not really much reason to believe they could do it other than that the Titans are as inconsistent as any team in the league.
Did you know that Josh Johnson was the fourth oldest quarterback to ever win his first start?
Read that in our statistical manual.
Who else finished ahead?
And that, don't recall that other part.
So you don't know everything, do you?
What, maybe Vince Evans? Or
Dieter
something?
Brock, Stan Gelbaugh of Seattle Seahawks, and Jamie Martin. Remember the old St. Louis Rams in 2005?
You know how you like – wow, I haven't heard of that either.
Jamie Martin.
You hear that phrase like, this is the team no one wants to see in the playoffs, like because, oh, they're dangerous. This is the game between the teams no one wants to see in the playoffs just because, like, they don't want to watch them.
Right.
No
yeah.
one
right.
wants to watch these teams – in the
I mean,
playoffs.
Especially for the Redskins.
Right. And Derrick Henry, you mentioned, I haven't, like, Tennessee Titans haven't carried people to fantasy championships out of nowhere since the old Billy Volek, Drew Bennett run of 2004 out of nowhere. Something going on with the Titans.
Weren't there a bunch of people like 500 yards a game.
That helped pay for a ticket for me over to Japan where I met my wife.
Whoa, Volek.
Really?
Wow. Is Volek the best man?
Volek and I was in a high
school. Wait, how did you meet
league.
Your wife in Japan? That's...
She was friends with, like, my best friend growing up.
Okay.
She was, like, in his small circle of friends, you know, friends of college and stuff. She went to college in the States. She was there.
Billy Volek, the matchmaker?
Damn.
I wouldn't go with this. If I had to pick the Titans in this week or the next week moving forward and I had to put my life on it, I'd rather fly a plane blind.
Wow.
That's
a lot.
Then picking the Titans this
I would
week?
Take the Titans.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, you'd probably die.
I would say the Titans at home against the Redskins. Doesn't seem that crazy.
No. That's how little confidence I have in the Titans, just because they burned me so many times.
They do that. That's what Wes would say, too, if he was here. Because just they have a way of reeling people in and then and laying a stink bomb. Let's see if it happens this week. Moving on, the Baltimore Ravens. This is the Saturday night game. Oh, and it's a gorgeous Saturday night game, Greg. I know you love it. You love it.
This is the most interesting Ravens team I can remember versus, like, the chance of Phillip Rivers to become a legend.
Fun.
As it gets.
8-6, the Ravens are. Took care of business against Tampa, and they are in playoff position. They just need to close strong here, and they have to go to L.A. now to face the Chargers. And, Nick, we know the last time we saw the Chargers, who were coming off a little bit of a mini bye here, they had that tremendous comeback against the Chiefs with the 2-point conversion. Phil Rivers waving, taunting the Chiefs fans. He jogged into the tunnel. So high times in Chargers land. How do you see this one?
High times for a potential letdown. And I'm one of the biggest Charger proponents you'll find this year. They were my Super Bowl pick before the season because I like to be wrong. And I thought I'd be pretty wrong there. But no, I think this is a Charger team that got a huge win last week and is facing a team that looks vastly different than it did in the first half of the season. And they might get caught just a little bit off guard, but it is the biggest game in the history of StubHub Center.
I will say one thing, that the Ravens...
That's
no,
true.
Galaxy have had some big games. Yeah.
Beckham brought a title to the hub one year, or maybe even two.
It's also not even a home field for the Chargers on any level. Well, but despite that, I believe that they are going to take this, and I'm locking this up for the Chargers. It wasn't a lot to pick from. I feel good about that. The Ravens are an interesting
team. Hey,
we're
not judging.
No, I actually had to look at a bunch of these games and say, can't lock this up, can't lock this up. This one, I feel good about.
I think this is why wouldn't you pick against the Chargers the way they're playing, all this good mojo? But I'm kind of with Shook a little bit here, Greg. Do you see the possibility of a little bit of a letdown? The Chargers still going to the playoffs either way. They could still take care of business next week at Denver and solidify themselves as a 12-4 team.
I don't even think it's a letdown. I just think they're two relatively even teams.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ravens just went to Kansas City and took them to overtime. They have
a very
defined style. The Chargers have the edge that they had more days to prepare for this game, and I think that's important because I think the Ravens are maybe the toughest team in the NFL to prepare for right now. If you look at the offense, is certainly running a different scheme than just about anyone else in terms of the way they run the ball and the way you have to prepare and the way Lamar Jackson's running ability gets receivers open. But even more on offense, where the Chargers' offensive line has been iffy, I would say, over the last few weeks. This is a tough defense to prepare for, all the protections, and we don't know if Keenan Allen's going to play. Melvin Gordon is expected to be back. But I see these two teams as playoff quality teams. Marlon Humphrey is playing unbelievable for the Ravens right now. And I don't know. I think it's a coin flip game. I give a little edge to the Chargers, but not much.
And you wonder if the nature of not just this Charger season, which 11-3 and playing incredible ball, but also that primetime win is, if there are Chargers fans in this region where we're doing this podcast right now, will there be Chargers fans in that building, filling out that building, or is it going to be an invasion of Baltimore fans?
They're not really like, yeah, that's a good question. 2 days before Christmas, are the Ravens,
that's a weird travel,
are the Ravens going to travel anyways? I don't know.
Then the Ravens fans will turn into maybe some empty seats, which is even worse. But, I mean, there's no team with a more complex you know, in relationship with a fan base that really is only 2 hours away, but many of them would have no interest at this point.
I want to see the Chargers make the Super Bowl just for that reason.
One thing on the letdown, the letdown could have come after they beat the Steelers, the game that I thought they were going to drop and not show up to. They showed up to that, then they showed up again. And so this one to me is like, the Ravens have not dealt with a great run defense during this showy stretch. And the Chargers, unlike a lot of these other teams in the playoff bye situation, are very balanced.
This is the biggest test for Lamar Jackson. I'm fascinated to see it. But I've seen, and Wes has talked about it, they've played a bunch of cupcake run defenses. Like, I get it. But they also aren't just okay, they're good at running.
They're destroying
them. They're the best running teams, you know, by some measures in 30 years over the last 5 weeks. So that's a lot.
I mean, it comes down to, from the point of a defender who's playing against the Ravens, is if you read pass and all of a sudden Lamar pulls it down to run.
He's hit a surprising amount of third and long passes. Doesn't have many passing yards, but has a number of third and long conversions when teams are just preventing, looking to stop the run.
Is it unfair that Rivers is not getting pulled into the MVP race at all?
I'm putting him in there. I think if he wins this game.
I just don't think he's going to win.
I think if he wins this game and Mahomes struggled in Seattle, I think he's got a real shot.
Ooh. Jared Goff has eliminated himself from the running, so take one more player out of
it. Rivers.
I think it's Breeze, Rivers, and Mahomes. And I mean, and if Philip and the Chargers got the one seed after this closing stretch, I think he gets it.
Let's move on to a game. These are the Sunday games now, and a game that had no business meaning nothing in Week 16, but that's just the way things shook out this year. The 5-9 Atlanta Falcons, who finally snapped a five-game losing streak by beating up on the wretched Cardinals, travel to Charlotte to face the Panthers, and it will not be a game that features Cam Newton. The Panthers announced they were shutting down their star quarterback, at least this week, and most likely next week as well, of course, with Taylor Heinicke getting the start, Greg. So this is not a game bathed in glory.
I know. I feel like I want to, like, email or, you know, DM some, you know, a Panthers beat writer and just think what they think of Taylor Heinicke. Maybe Taylor Heinicke is going to do some things. I don't know. I mean, because I don't think this Panthers team has been that bad. And you hear some reports this week. There's conflicting reports about Rivera's future. But I know that defense played their hearts out on Monday Night Football.
They really did.
This is a division game. And the Panthers winning with Taylor Heinicke wouldn't shock me. At this point, the way Cam Newton was playing, I don't know. Maybe it's a better thing.
And I know Ron Rivera is supposedly in danger of losing his job. But that team on defense played its ass off, and you kept on thinking that then the Panthers would come out and go 3-and-out, and the Saints would have pretty good field position. You'd be like, okay, now the Saints are going to pull away. But no, the Panthers kept on making stops, kept on putting pressure on Drew Brees, and the offense just could not carry their side of this. So, why not get a look at what a team can do with at least a healthy quarterback?
Heinicke's like 6'1" and a totally different physical specimen than Cam Newton, so let's see what that means. But the one thing about the Falcons, like, they've been utterly disappointing, and I know they played the Cardinals, maybe the worst team that we've seen in half a decade. So put all that
in the Browns
your
were
equation.
Pretty bad last year.
Well, I actually think last year's Browns team would wipe the floor with the Cardinals team that we see half the time, honestly. I mean, we find out that Hugh Jackson probably took five wins away from last year's Browns.
Hugh Jackson versus Steve Wilkes, that's a battle.
That's Yeah. That is not something that we need.
No, and we won't get it.
We're not going to get it. But I think the Falcons finally ran the ball with some huge plays from Tevin Coleman last week, and so can they keep that going? Otherwise, I mean, we're 2 weeks away from putting both of these teams into a coffin,
good.
And we'll see it, you know, at the owners' meeting.
See, I feel like this Panthers team has been...
Oh, we're still talking about this game.
Oh, we're going on?
No. But that was a good Tevin Coleman nugget, Mark, and you have a nugget on.
I'm really interested to see what Taylor Heinicke does. He hasn't started a game since 2014 when he was at Old Dominion. Let's do it.
I'm interested, but I could also think of like 25 things that are more of a fascination to me than watching Heinicke play football on Sunday. But you know what? I'm sure it will be quite intriguing. It'll be nice for everyone.
Dan was thinking like that's where we can catch up. We've been pretty heavy on these first two games.
So close.
Then nah.
There's some trash baggers coming up. Don't worry.
The Cincinnati Bengals are 6-8, and they beat the Raiders last week, but they're playing out the string again, and maybe this is the end of Marvin Lewis in Cincy. Well, here he is now traveling with his team to Cleveland to face the Browns, Mark Sessler, who got dealt a setback. They took care of business against the Broncos on Saturday, but then the Steelers beat the Pats, which really kind of closed the door most likely on magic and a potential Week 17 party for the Browns. But still, finishing the season strong in what's been a very positive season, that's a good thing too.
The playoff thing felt like it was essentially last Saturday's fantasy, and it went to bed on Sunday. That's fine. I mean, they basically can get in if a bunch of teams were to lose out and the Colts and Titans tied in Week 17.
I feel like when...
And they open the season, the Browns tie, with a tie, so you know, never know.
When we talk about these playoff
I like that, Mark.
Calculations, Greg... When people have to throw in a tie, I feel like we got to keep that out of it's like a separate conversation.
Although I saw Mark's eyes just light up.
I mean,
The Colts almost tied the Texans earlier. I mean,
Colts-Titans feels like a game that might be more tie-worthy than some others. So, I don't know.
That's totally
What does
fair.
That even mean?
I agree.
See it happening.
If I was,
all right, you give the logic why that
If I'm
sense.
Picking a game that could tie the rest of the year, Indy at Tennessee, that's up there.
Why?
Because it's like they're fairly even. It's in Tennessee. It could be ugly. It's like, you know, the defensive. The Colts were in a 6-0 game on the road in the division. Why not?
It is.
That's my favorite analysis.
It's not only possible, it feels probable.
I could come up with a reason for anything.
It would be a great cycling of karma if the Colts and Titans tied, putting the Browns in the playoffs when it was the Colts and Titans game that knocked the Browns out of the playoffs in 2007.
They sat Peyton Manning like cowards.
Yes.
What happens?
Jim Sorgi.
What happens if the Colts and Titans tie, and then the Browns lose in Week 17. That would suck.
Drive my car off a cliff.
Business as usual.
This is a win-win game because the Bengals win this game and annoy you guys. It's like that's another year of Marvin Lewis. It's like Groundhog Day.
How is that a win-win?
Well, then you get keep Marvin Lewis in the
but
division.
But you also have Marvin Lewis in your life.
You're saying
we want
for
him
a Browns
around.
Fan. Yeah.
I'm fine with Marvin Lewis around. He's kind of fun to
I'm saying as a Browns fan, I think, you know. Like,
what if they replace him with Hugh Jackson?
It's like Groundhog Day. It's like, ooh, the Bengals get a Week 16, Week 17 win. That means you'll see another seven years of Marvin Lewis. It's delicious.
Here's how bad it's been for Cleveland and honestly Cincinnati in many ways too. But the Browns have not swept the Bengals since 2002, and they have not swept any division opponent since that 2007 season.
Keep knocking these little –
That's what I mean each week because last week was the Broncos thing. It's like I don't forget the playoffs. Like keep doing these little things and learn how to win week after week. And you're playing a Bengals team that is super bad. Banged up, backup quarterback, no A.J. Green. They've got a bunch of players on defense out. It's in Cleveland. You have Hugh Jackson in the house. You have no reason not to close your home slate with a big old romp over the Bengals.
There have been few late season games where it's basically meaningless, save for a miracle, where there will be more vitriol for an opposing team.
Mm,
Cleveland will be ready for Hugh Jackson.
And I did a QB index this week where I did an experiment like which quarterbacks would you take from the last four draft classes. Got Baker Mayfield number 2 behind Mahomes ahead of Carson Wentz.
Ooh.
So a couple years later, you know, Sashi Brown, not saying Sashi Brown deserves all the credit, but the process of the thought process that he went through, it's like right now I think a lot of people would take Baker Mayfield over Wentz anyways, and you got the Denzel Ward pick.
I think
sort
I agree with that, but didn't you only get Baker Mayfield because you went
0-16? Right, there's a lot that went into it. You got a lot of luck. You got a lot of good draft picks from John Dorsey, but you got a lot of good draft picks.
I'm just saying, I don't know how you
going 0-16. Going 0-16 was like honestly the best thing that ever happened to them.
I'm saying like the process, the thought process that went behind it, that you'll get your quarterback later with a better team around him, ultimately came true. And the Denzel Ward pick is kind of connected through those Sashi.
We also can't overlook the fact that Sashi Brown bungled a trade with the Bengals for A.J. McCarron. That's part of it,
or
too.
Or Hugh. Who knows?
Well, the one Sashi draft pick who has sort of been on the fence, Jabril Preppers had his best game of his career last week.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, he made a real difference, which he'd been waiting for that
Njoku,
for a long time.
Njoku, Ogunjobi, Garrett. That's a great draft class.
Yep.
All right, moving on. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 5-9. They've lost two straight. Ain't no magic in Tampa. And Dirk Koetter, this is probably the end of the road for old Durkey, but we'll see. Nick Shook. They travel now to Dallas.
No one's ever called him Durkey.
How do you know?
Hey, it's my kid brother, Durkey.
They call him Beef Durkey.
No one I've ever heard.
Yeah. they travel a big D to face the Cowboys, who, of course, got humbled last week. 23-0 shutout loss at the hands of the Colts. So this seems on paper, Nick, to be a perfect bounce-back opponent for the Cowboys if they want to lock down the NFC East.
And a death march for the Buccaneers, right? 28th in total defense, 27th against the pass. 27th against the run. Cowboys coming off not putting a single point on the board. Yeah, I think this is a great matchup for Dallas to get back on track as they head toward the playoffs. And they also have to hold off a pesky Eagles team that they've beaten twice. But, you know, you have to worry about them and their wild card implications if they could sneak in. So they still need to win games.
Well, no, the Bucs have been playing. I mean, I think people overrate, like, oh, they're not playing for this coach or this or that. If you wanted to put anything into it, they had a lead against the Saints pretty late in that game 2 weeks ago. The Ravens game essentially came down to the last possession. Vita Vea's playing pretty well for them. The old Hard Knocks buddy, Riley Bullock, is now starting playing every snap. Levante David's playing pretty well. And then you watch this Cowboys team. They're second in the league in plays per drive and 18th in points. And that's, to me, them in a nutshell. Jason Garrett was even saying this week. We don't have problems with the offense. We just need to finish drives. But we've been moving it great all year. And I'm thinking, like, you're way too happy about having 10-play drives that end up in field goals.
Last week they got in their own way. Like, that game should not have been a shutout on any level.
No.
They could not figure out how to close drives.
Throughout the week, everyone was like, well, this was a great reality check to bring us back to earth, to make us realize that we're not unbeatable. I'm like, win a game by two scores once.
Right. Perceived you to be unbeatable?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But that's how the Cowboys always think when they ever – there's no one handles success worse. Like, beat a team by two scores. Over the last 6 weeks when they've supposedly turned the corner with Cooper, they essentially have scored as many points as their opponent. I mean, it's like – They're better with Cooper, but Dak Prescott needs to have a good game. He has not put together a complete game in a while.
I don't know if this is the opponent, though, that's going to actually allow them to figure something else out other than throwing it to Amari Cooper. And if they don't figure that out soon, they're not going to be much of a threat in the playoffs.
No, they're going to lose to the Seahawks in the playoffs.
I do think Zeke is running. He seems to be picking up steam as the season goes along. He's like a running back. He looks better now, I think, than he did in September.
The Bucs are not an automatic out, though. To Greg's point, they keep hanging around in these games, and it's their offense. Like, and their defense got a little bit better. So,
well, JPP has quietly had a nice season, his best season since the fireworks incident. Another Hard Knocks hero of the past, Carl. Is it Nassib or Nassib?
Nassib.
He's actually turned into a decent player. He has 6.5 sacks for the Bucs, so a nice waiver pickup there.
There's some talent on this roster, and I feel like with the new coaching staff, they could see a nice little jump next year.
Agreed.
We're always waiting for the Bucs to make that jump.
It's true.
But it's the coaching switch that triggers
it. And it's probably going to be Jameis Winston being their quarterback again on a one-year
option. He's probably going to make more money than people think.
Let us move on and speak of the Minnesota Vikings. Let's try to make sense of this Vikings team who took care of business at home against the Dolphins, who were coming off that miracle win over the Patriots, and they come down to earth. See, that's a team being brought down to earth. It's like you're thinking you're special. All of a sudden, you're in the playoff race, and it's like, no, 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 no. You're literally pretty bad.
Well, they're going to be below the earth soon.
Exactly. So that improved the Vikings to 7-6-1. Now they travel to Detroit. Greg, another game on paper that it looks like the Vikings will be able to stack a win here during these precious final weeks of the season, especially with Matt Stafford taking an absolute beating this season, and the Vikings love to get after the quarterback.
Yeah, the matchup's tough. This the first time these two teams played was one of the most dominant defensive line performances of the season by any team, including the Vikings, who have had quite a few. And you would think that's going to happen again. And you would think some of the ways that the Vikings cooked up more offense last week. There was a good article in The Athletic by Arif Hassan. They doubled the amount of play action passes that they've had per game going into that week. Cousins has been one of the best play action quarterbacks in the NFL basically for 5 years. Dalvin Cook's breaking tackles, looking explosive. It's all pointing to the Vikings, and yet this is a game I think if you're an Eagles fan or Seahawks or anyone else who has interest in the Vikings, you think it's a road game in a division, and crazy things happen sometimes road games in a division.
It's kind of a logical trend that's happened with teams that can't protect up front very well. For whenever they employ the play action, they immediately become better at the football. And sometimes it's without even running the ball well. Now, it helped them last week with Dalvin Cook, obviously. But, yeah, this Vikings team, I can't figure them out.
I mean, here's what I'd figure out of them. They had 9 sacks against – they broke Ryan Tannehill last week. They broke that offense midway through that game. And there's no reason to think they couldn't get up into those upper reaches again against this Lions.
It's a huge – I'm really interested to watch them this week because I thought that was their best game of the season by a decent amount. And if they do it again, they've got the players to be one of those teams that just changes gears and is a different Viking squad than we saw all season. It's possible.
It would be a good way to build momentum going into that week 17 game against Chicago.
I will believe it when I see it.
No, I hear you.
Because they still haven't beaten a team over 500.
Me too.
Cousins has come up as small as you can come up in a lot of these primetime affairs. And maybe this team just doesn't have it. But they're still in the mix, and they control their destiny, and they should be in good position going into Week 17.
I mean, if they look like they did last week against an up-and-down Lions team, mostly down, like then you have to wonder if the Kevin Stefanski switch at offensive coordinator has a lot to do with it. Because maybe sometimes these guys, their ideas and their thought process are being kept down by someone else above them. And we've seen it in Cleveland. And if you get another game like this, you have to wonder what the Vikings offense had been all year long. Held down.
Oh, damn.
But the small sample size. Wow. They could go right back to what they were.
That was cold. Sessler turning.
No, I'm with Dan.
It's so cold
I like DeFilippo a lot.
You loved John DeFilippo so much.
I'm saying that we have to wait and see.
It was a bad fit, though. Sometimes quarterbacks and teams are bad fits.
Keeping down Kev. He was saying, Stefanski, you stay in that closet. This is my show.
I said sample size is minuscule. We will find out. But this happens. Come on.
The G-Men, 5-9, losers last week, eliminated from the playoffs, travel to Indianapolis to face the Colts. Interesting how the schedule, Mark, is shaping up as we go through these games. A lot of these teams that are fighting for their lives and need a win are getting a little cupcake on their schedule.
Well, yeah, it's like a mirror game of the Titans-Redskins. It's an AFC South contender playing a massive trash bag from the NFC East. And so you get the Giants you know what? We can say that the Titans' performance against New York, it doesn't count because it was in a downpour.
But
Titans ran all over the Giants, and the Giants have the best running back in the NFL who amounted for – he had 31 yards against Tennessee. They couldn't get it going. Eli Manning played one of the worst games he's played all year. Once they have 10 penalties, they're sloppy.
Wait, let's talk about the Colts. Forget about the Giants.
I'm just saying they're going to take care of business. The Colts, to me right now, their offensive line's been awesome. Marlon Mack is their clear number one back right now. They ran the ball really well last week against Dallas, especially in the red zone. And I like this storyline of Darius Leonard, who we can talk about. There's no such thing as a Pro Bowl snub. He was a snub, and he's so annoyed that he told teammates he's going to have 40 tackles in this game. And I would love
that.
Nothing more on the planet Earth than to see him have 40 tackles against Giants.
I read that one of his coaches, it might have even been Frank Reich, was like, bro, it's actually not possible to even do that, really.
So I mean, I know it's not, but what if he gets 23?
But I just love that the coach felt the need to just say, all right, maybe bring it down a little bit. But even if he has, 28 tackles, that would be tremendous, Greg.
25 would be nice.
25 would be great.
That's the thing I'm most excited for on Sunday, just to see what happens here.
Imagine 40 tackles.
You're right that Marlon Mack's been running well, and it shows how you can build a running game in different ways, that the Colts have a pretty strong running game because of the offensive line and Marlon Mack improving in his second season, whereas the Giants are up and down. Saquon Barkley's great, but so many of his yards are through the air. I just love how this Colts team looks like a different team than the beginning of the year. They look like a veteran team. They use tempo better than any team in the league. I would include the Patriots even in that. They're the fastest paced team in the league. And usually you'd expect that to be a team that's been in a system a long time, or a bunch of players who have been in the same system a long time. But they've had players coming in and out all year. It's a bunch of new players with a new coaching staff. They've done an incredible job. T.Y. Hilton's playing so tough, and the team of Westiel has come through for him.
Well, here's the thing. The Colts are the one team in that wild card pack above any other team, I think, that a division winner would not want to see on wild card weekend. But, Greg, as you pointed out yesterday on Twitter, they don't control their own destiny. Despite having a nice setup against the Giants this weekend, being 8-6, they could still get pop potential.
They could if the Steelers and Ravens win out, which when I sent that tweet out, everyone told me is impossible. And I don't know why. I just have like a gut feeling that
why is it impossible?
I mean, because the Steelers play in New Orleans and Baltimore plays in L.A. It's not impossible.
It's far from impossible.
They thought it's unlikely that both happens, which is true. They would have to win tough road games. But I just think this is a time of year. Some of these teams, like the Colts and the Ravens, are playing their absolute best. So some of these teams might win out.
I'm a big fan of this Colts team, like you said. Their offense is extremely diverse. They can attack you in a number of ways. And they even have a nice little change of pace back in Nyheim Hines. And right now, you're right. You know, they're them. And if we pick between them and the Ravens, I'm taking
the Colts. And that was a dead dome at the beginning of the year. The Colts fans were understandably kind of over this team.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's kind of rocking again. It's in a good football town again.
I mean, if I could look in the mirror on this game, I would absolutely lock up the Colts because they're going to take care of business here. Even though the Giants, as bad as they've been in a lot of games this year, they are a team I think that can put together a competitive effort pretty much any week. I do not think the Colts are going to let their season get ruined in their building by the Giants.
No, you cannot also.
But what I do want to lock up, and I forgot to do it before, but I am locking up the Vikings on the road against the Lions. Let us move on. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 4-10, going nowhere. Doug Marrone, another head coach, potentially in great danger. And they travel to Miami to face the Dolphins, who were beaten up pretty good by the Vikings, Nick. And before I throw it to you, I want to share a pretty wild stat. I always love these types of stats, so I want to bring it up. Actually, no, let me throw it to you while I look for that. Start talking about this game between these two
as
teams.
As we're on the wild stat weight line, we could play some soft piano jazz. this is not a team or a game I'm looking forward to watching. I hate to say it. I'm sorry.
Surprising.
The Dolphins are very much a team that every time you see their potential, they get held back by having to play Brock Osweiler at quarterback or not figuring out who their running back is. You know, last week it was suddenly Kalen Ballage, whereas Kenyon Drake was their guy before and Frank Gore got hurt. So it's just not a team I'm looking forward to watching play against a defense that has played well in spots, but for the most part has been, you know, an extreme disappointment compared to last year, and an offense that's quarterbacked by Cody Kessler. I mean, there's not much to like about this game.
No, I don't think, and I mentioned it before with Josh Johnson, but it sort of got lost in the shuffle how completely off the rails and ugly this Jaguar season lost that they couldn't win at home against Josh Johnson.
Brutal.
I mean, this is the best 3 weeks of Manish Mehta's life watching what's happened to Doug Marrone here. Marrone gets rid of Nathaniel Hackett and Blake Bortles on the same day, so he doesn't know who's really causing the offensive problems. And people think like, and I mentioned this, and it's gotten so much worse. They have it's the worst three-game offensive stretch in Jaguars history, according to yards.
There's a lot to pick from
there. Since they made that change, not like it really matters in the long run, but it kind of does because it's making Doug Marrone look bad, and he's probably going to lose his job partly because of that. All these other teams are switching coordinators or quarterbacks, and they get a little jump, and the Jaguars went from like a D to an F minus.
Well, and Cody Kessler, fair. 20 net yards passing. I mean, how often does that happen in an NFL game?
And just in case you are not aware of who Manish Mehta is, he's the
sorry,
New York Daily News columnist who almost single-handedly destroyed and submarined Marone's chances of getting a job with the Jets after he left the Bills
and then
a
has,
couple of years
has
back.
Like can you know maintained an aggressive rivalry
aggressive.
With him on social media.
Suspiciously aggressive.
A one-sided rivalry, but basically dancing on his grave. And unfortunately, because this Jaguars team was kind of fun to watch last year, I think they're just going to blow it all
but
up.
But don't you think, and I wrote about this in my mailbag that will come out tomorrow, don't you think the Dolphins, someone asked this question. It's a good question, actually. What would you rather have? Would you rather have a total washout, awful draft pick like a Manziel or a Ryan Leaf, or have a guy like a Blake Bortles where he's not as supremely terrible and disastrous as those type of draft busts, but kind of keeps your holds your hostage your franchise hostage for a few extra years? What's the worst scenario?
I would want to be out of either one of those scenarios as quickly as possible.
Right, so the bigger
so
bust.
I take the bigger bust.
I thought you were going to say Ryan so Tannehill, because there's an argument that
Tannehill could be that guy. You could look at him
he's
too.
He's not at that level, yeah. But you know he they have been on the fence with him now for years.
Are we sure Adam Gase comes back to the Dolphins next
well,
year?
Let me just finish this point. So what I was thinking was, aren't the Jaguars the type of team? Because I wrote, you definitely don't want to have the total bust guy because everyone gets fired. It's an embarrassing setback for the franchise, and you basically punt 2-3 years from your existence because you have to start over. With the Jaguars, they've had a deal with Blake Bortles, but he hasn't been so uncompetitive that they haven't been able to build a contender for the last couple of years. If they go out and bring in a better quarterback, I could see this team being in the mix
yeah.
again next year.
They're going to have a nice high pick, too.
They're not a reboot situation just because Bortles didn't work out.
No, they have a lot of pieces, and I think that Marone probably is not – he was never driving the train on let's give an extension to Blake Bortles. It was foisted upon him, and now the whole thing's gone south, and it's like you're the guy we're going to fire and say everything's you know better because Tom Coughlin's going to step in and – coach this team.
That was going to be my option C to that question, was I'd rather not have a GM like Dave Caldwell who doesn't have the stones to make a move at quarterback when he knows that's what's going to put him over
Fair.
The top.
Here's the thing, the Dolphins, you know, they just got to beat the Jaguars and they'll be in the mix most likely in week 17. Long, long way.
Well, much better at home, too.
Well, on that Gase thing, too. I think
Gase is going to be around, by the
way. I think
way.
That keeps his
it
job.
It seems like that's the buzz, yeah. is that Gase is more likely to be back than perhaps Mike Tannenbaum. But these things, you know, tend to be wrong,
Gase,
these little reports 2 weeks yeah. ahead of time.
Gase, who we liked when we met him in Orlando yeah. Earlier this year, but he has fit right into that Miami culture. So this is what I was looking for earlier. The Dolphins are 7-7 this season, 19-19 in their last 38 games, 23-23 in their last 46 games, 42-42 in their last 84 games, and 66-66 in their last 132 games. Games.
But you know what sells?
That's outrageous.
In Miami, being average and beating the Patriots at home once a year. That's
That'll
enough to keep your job.
They're the only team in the NFL ranked
higher,
bottom five
true.
On offense and defense. And they still have the record they do. Please.
The Buffalo Bills are 5-9. They travel to New England to face the Patriots. The big news, of course, on Thursday in the NFL is that Josh Gordon put up one of his Instagram posts saying that he needed to step away from the game to deal with some mental issues that he was going through right now. And then very quickly after that, it leaked and then became official that Gordon had failed another drug test. So I don't know if the chicken or the egg situation. But either way, Josh Gordon is out of the mix for the Patriots. He's probably headed toward a lengthy suspension. And his Patriots career is over, and you – got to wonder at this point, Greg, if his football career is finally over, because he was the Patriots' leading receiver this year. But I think the reason why teams like the Browns and the Patriots had so much faith in him was because of that talent, and he hasn't been a game breaker on the field this year.
Well, we've ended his career on this show so many times that I would definitely not do it coming off of a very positive experience on the field in New England, where he's not as explosive, but I think he adapted to that offense very quickly, much more quickly than a lot of talented receivers, and was
True.
Playing some of his best football before last week, where he suddenly was just vanished, and now he's no longer on the team. So it's a big loss for the Patriots, who have been very lucky with injuries this year. They're maybe the healthiest team in the NFL. No one's on their injury report, and they barely have anyone on IR. But they were relying on Gordon because Edelman's not the same. Gronk's not the same. They don't have outside receivers. They haven't been playing Patterson or Dorsett really at wideout too much. And he was a big part of the team. And so now, having gotten used to him, I think it is a big loss, even though when he first signed, we had this conversation in this room. What are the odds he finishes the year with the team? I was saying it's probably not even 50-50, whether it's injury or suspension or whatever. And unfortunately, that's what happened.
I mean, it has been a lot less than 50-50 throughout his career, and it came at the worst time. But, you know, when these things happen, and it happens with Josh Gordon, it's happened so often that you have to say you wish him well and that he goes and deals with this situation. But this was a risk for the Patriots, and now they're stung by it. And it, you know, they gave up a draft pick for him, and you got a certain amount of production during the middle belly of the season, and now you go into the playoffs with you're a Patriots team with no outstanding weapon on offense, and a quarterback who is dealing with a knee injury from what
right. There might not be anybody on the injury report, but we all know that Brady, Edelman, and Gronk are all beat up this year. And that's the core of this offense, along with Josh Gordon, who's now no longer there. It's a tough situation for them.
You know, I went back and watched their last two games last night, and even though he's been such a big part of the offense, I felt like at times that I forgot Josh Gordon was on the Patriots. And I don't know if that's a product of their offense overall and how they've just kind of struggled at times or what, but I felt like they weren't throwing him the ball enough.
No, they spread it around. I think his best weeks were, you know, the two to three games after the bye.
Yeah.
Before last week's game. I'm actually, from a football perspective, it doesn't hit me as a Patriots fan as like a killer loss, just because you're right, they have other issues and they've been able to scheme up offense. I think they're more of a running team in general. You do think about a guy who he's going through the season knowing he's one strike away from changing the rest of his life. And this is something that's happened multiple times, and yet he still couldn't prevent that impending suspension. It's sad.
And then on the game itself, the Bills, as we know, you know, 2 months ago,
frisky,
people were throwing it out there. This was a historically terrible team, and certainly on offense, things were a mess with Nathan Peterman prominently involved. Vontae Davis earlier in the season walked away at halftime. It was a kind of a punchline situation in Orchard Park. But this is a really good, competitive Bills team with a very good defense, a frisky, mistake-prone, but can make plays quarterback and rookie Josh Allen, and a Patriots team that's on its heels a little bit, Greg, here. I'm going to ask you where your P scale level is. One is you're completely dry, and 10, oh my goodness, my diapers are soaked.
Well, all season long, I have not jumped off of one because this team is kind of what I think we've thought it was the whole time. I'm at 2.5 for this week because this week there's almost no way to win this game. And the Bills,
what number did you say?
I'm at 2.5.
You're funny.
Because, like, this game, it's almost all downside. If they end up winning comfortably, there's certain things you can take out of it, but that's kind of what's expected. And I think the Bills, to me, are a little dangerous. They've struggled against athletic quarterbacks. How do you plan for Josh Allen? And then this is a defense, which on paper should give the Patriots about as many problems as any defense they faced in a while.
They gave them problems on Monday Night Football until the final minutes of that game.
The counter is they've been a much better team at home. I don't know if that magically makes
it. There is an X factor because I do –
What do you say?
Laugh if you want.
Go
ahead.
No. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, but tell us what you want to say.
Mine was more of a button up on the conversation. You have something you want to
say. No, I think that an X factor is Brian Daboll because he has come from the Patriots' inner workings. He is the offensive coordinator.
Big Pony?
Who is when he was with Eric Mangini that they put it on Tom Brady and the Patriots years ago.
They did.
And he has been running some of the more creative play calls that you've seen over the last couple
months.
Did
it early
against
the Patriots.
Very bizarre stuff.
Which was successful.
We'll see.
I was going to say, Greg, that the Dolphins, you know, should take care of business at home against the Jags.
Yeah.
The Bills somehow go to Gillette and wipe out the Pats. And then here come the Jets up to Foxborough with the Dolphins with another cupcake themselves.
That's why I think this game.
Steal the division. Dolphins and Jets send the Pats home. No playoffs.
See,
no
this,
playoffs.
We don't want any of this excitement to build. So
no more playoffs.
That would be amazing. But I've been saying, like, almost nothing matters for this team until the playoffs, just because that's just who they are at this point. It's like you got to get there now, and you got to get there. And if Philadelphia gives you a gift with beating the Texans, you got to take advantage and get that bye week.
So, and it's, so if they don't get there, nothing mattered at all the entire time for the New England.
This season.
The whole season. Just no. didn't happen.
I mean, as a fan for me, no. Not really.
What was that?
Mr. Cool takes the snap.
Mr. Cool. You still got him, though. As long as Mr. Cool is behind center, the patch should be okay. But I'm just saying, there is a scenario, however far-fetched.
I mean, I recognize this glee. It's the same sort of happiness I had while watching Josh Beckett strike out the Yankees in the World Series when he was a member of the Florida Marlins. You just don't realize how much you want that lead team to get toppled. It means something.
It does. It sure does.
I don't know, but if they lost this year, it wouldn't be as much.
No,
it would be amazing.
They haven't been that team.
Well, it's time.
Yeah, they're not that team.
Let's move on. Yes, the New York Jets, they are 4-10. They almost beat the Texans last week, but they did not because their defense cannot close out a game. Their defense led by their defensive-minded, quote-unquote, head coach Todd Bowles, who's coaching out the string. And their opponent is the Packers, another team, surprisingly, Mark, playing out the string. There was some question, would Aaron Rodgers, who's banged up again, he's dealing with a groin issue. He finally gets over the knee issues. Now he's got a groin issue. And with the Packers having nothing to play for, maybe they just sit him. Aaron wants to play, so Aaron plays. Any thoughts about this game?
Last week I called for S. Darn to come out and, you know, deliver. And he did exactly that. We watched that game together, Dan, with a few nice drinks. And he made one thing about him that I think gives you a lot of hope if you're a Jets fan. There are a couple throws early in that game where he's sort of making the wide receiver seem to work, having to come back to the ball or dive down to catch it. But then when he gets hot, his ability to throw on the run on that touchdown drive right before the half, S. Darn made two beautiful throws on the run, and then an incredible over-the-shoulder touchdown pass to Andre Roberts. So you start to see it. You start to see it. If you're a Jets fan, that maybe this can happen. So why not take out as act two of the final, let's close the season well before they knock off the Patriots next week. Mm-hmm. Act two of three act closing the season out well would be knocking off a listless Packers team with an irritated quarterback and running back in Aaron Jones, who's not on the field. You're probably not going to have Randall Cobb. Joe Philbin is coaching the Packers. Why is this not easy pickings for the Jets? It's the final chance for Todd Bowles to do something before he's sent packing and Mike McCarthy becomes the Jets coach.
Nothing is easy pickings for the Jets, but I like it. It actually would be Act 3 because S. Darn already had a great second half comeback in Buffalo, then the great game against Houston. And now, yes.
It is cool to
keep it going. Keep it going into the offseason.
It's cool to see S. Darn picking up steam. I think it's the most viral nickname since the trade tsunami coming out of this podcast studio. It's happening. S. Darn.
It is. I think it rolls off the tongue, and it's versatile. You can use it in a lot of different ways.
So. I want you to know that it polluted my mentions for a solid 2 hours.
As it should.
On Saturday.
As it should.
It's your fault.
Houston Texans are 10-4. Yes, they narrowly defeated the New York Jets at the Meadowlands, but a win's a win. Now they go to Philly to face the Eagles. I love this game, Nick, because Houston is a solid team, but not a team that you would imagine is going to go into Philly and dominate. Meanwhile, the Eagles are a flawed team, but this is kind of like a little bit of a mojo heat check right here after that great Sunday night win. Can they string together another win and get the people of Philly pumped up?
These are two teams that the Eagles are very Jekyll and Hyde. One week they play above what you expect. The next week they put a clunker out there. That's how they get to 7-7 at this point. But then you have a Texans team that they have Deshaun Watson and they have Lamar Miller, but they can't protect Deshaun Watson. And the only way they can really run the ball well is in a zone scheme. Sometimes it works, gap, runs work as well. But without Lamar Miller, they're completely lost offensively. They can't run the football. And when they can't run the football, they can't move the football because defenses tee off on Deshaun Watson and their offensive line is already not good at protecting him. So then the onus shifts to the defense. And I wonder, once it comes to playoff time, is this going to be a team that the way I look at them right now is they are an early exit unless they can establish the run and sit on a lead. Now, when it comes to this game, I don't know what to expect out of the Eagles because of the whole Nick Foles thing, and I don't know if the Rams are actually a good barometer of who the Eagles are right now.
Made some nice throws. Yeah. It doesn't matter who
they caught the Rams at the right time, but still.
But having said all of that, I'm locking it up for the Eagles.
Whoa, Shooky.
He's getting bold.
I like
Shooky
it.
Steps into the West chair and locks it up for the defending champs.
Well, I am of the mind,
like,
if Shook ends up only locking up one game all year and he gets it right, and it's such a bold pick, he's the champion.
The only reason that we are getting this nonsensical sales campaign by Greg is that he is dead last in this competition.
No,
he wants to create total
again.
Uproar and chaos by hand. And Shook, I would give you full props if you get this lock right. But not an at-bats type scenario, Shook goes 1-0, and Greg hands the title to him and wants it to catch steam on the Reddit board and online. Here we go.
There's two reasons. Three, maybe. Well, one, you know, this reaction you just gave me. That's the number one reason. Number two is you put sandwiches on you winning it. So actually, I have sandwich on winning. So I should be rooting for the field, not you, Mark. And so Shook is part of that field. And so that's exciting.
You have as much of a chance.
And then three,
no one's
taking me seriously other than you. I guess that's kind of number one.
I have a theory for reason four.
Okay.
Greg wants to split this friendship up.
Ooh. No.
Right down the middle.
Between you and I?
Yeah, right down the middle.
Oh, it's always something Machiavellian and decisive going, you know, divisive.
We're not tied by our misery anymore.
Right.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't want this.
I didn't know you guys were friends.
By the way, this just got.
You didn't know we were friends.
this just got even more juicy because let's hear from the great mailman.
Oh. Hello, Bozos and Ricky Hollywood. It's time for the Eagles to take the dirt nap they've been trying to take all year. It's not their fault. Injuries, the brain drain on the coaching staff, I get it. But it's time for everybody to stop acting like this team has a shot at the playoffs, that Nick Foles is one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen. It's time for the Texans to go into Philadelphia and lock it up. A good team beating a bad team, that's what we need. So January works out best. We need good football. We don't need bad football. Bye, Eagles. Dirt nap time. Lock it up for the Texans.
Wes, who for the first time this season is not alone in first place in the locks, because Sessler is surging with 8 straight wins.
Mm.
I wanted to give you the credit. You deserve. You like
thank
it
you.
To be known that you deserve credit for this lock streak. I'm giving it.
Well, not the way I would put that, but you know, you can do as you wish.
But you are, for the first time, you caught him.
Yeah,
I'm 2 games back now because we all picked up a game on Wes, and now he's going with. This is an interesting theory from Wes, who's going with his heart a little bit. He doesn't like the Eagles. Didn't really love that Nick Foles run last year, and he wants it
no,
to go
Nick
away
Foles
right now.
No, Nick Foles stuck it to him last year. I think I'm on Wes's side. I would pick the Texans. This is kind of a coin flip game.
Mm.
But there is a recipe out there to beat the Texans right now, and it's pretty obvious. It's that they can't handle more than 4 rushers. I mean, the Jets blitzed them well. The week before – Who did they play the week before who blitzed the heck out of Deshaun Watson? And the numbers are dramatic.
The Montreal Alouettes.
It was the Colts.
The Colts. The numbers are dramatic when he's facing more than 4 rushers. And it's one of those things in the NFL, until you show you can solve it, teams are going to keep doing it. So some of that's on Watson, who holds the ball forever. And you got to figure out the protection. A lot of it's on the offensive line and coaching, which has been really poor throughout Bill O'Brien's run. It's kind of been his bugaboo that he hasn't been able to figure out the line and the coaching there. And you're going up against a coordinator in Jim Schwartz who just cooked up a beautiful game plan that was very creative against Philadelphia. And even when he doesn't blitz, right now Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox are 2nd and 3rd in the league in quarterback hits, period. Not just at their positions. So there is still a defense and get after you. So that's the recipe. Ugly it up and Foles hits a bomb or two and good night.
You know what I liked was we still got a little bit of that holiday party residual grainy voice from Wes there.
Wes.
Not all the way back.
I feel like we should all pick this game, Mark and Dan.
He's definitely.
No, I'm not going to.
A hangover of that nature can stick around for 2 days.
Wow.
Sometimes, you know? Yes, I would not be surprised at all if the Eagles win, but I think the Texans, again, squeeze one
team.
Out.
I'm going Eagles.
They've been winning close games all year.
Solidarity.
All right. Let's move on. The Los Angeles Rams, who have, out of nowhere, lost 2 straight, including that really public stumble on Sunday Night Football against the Eagles. So they're now 11-3, and their hopes of a 1 seed are just about shot. All they can do is control their own games, and they have 2 cupcakes to wrap up their schedule, starting with the Cardinals. They finish with the Niners. Thoughts on this game, Greg?
Oh, boy. You know, everyone's thinking they go to Arizona and it's easy. They're two touchdown favorites. Like, okay, that's mm-hmm. done. Arizona at home, their defense has played fairly well.
You going to lock it up?
No. Oh. I mean, the offense.
Ooh, that would have been fun.
Yeah, that would have been amazing. The offense is what you're worried about with the Rams. The defense has actually improved statistically over the last 3 or 4 weeks from, like, mid-level to a little better than average. Not a big yeah. difference. Whereas the offense has fallen off a cliff. And so when I look at this matchup and you look at the right side of the offensive line for the Rams struggling and you see Jared Goff kind of in his own head, I don't necessarily see this as a cakewalk for them to figure it out offensively and put up 35 points or anything. I think they're going to win the game, of course, but I don't know. I think they have something to prove these next 2 weeks. This is the first bit of adversity they face with Sean
McVay.
Well, that's
why I kind of expect them to come into this game pissed off.
That's what everyone thought last week, too, though. I'm a burn. They were almost.
This feels different where they are this week than where they were last week. There seems to be, especially with where Goff's at right now. And if you still believe in Goff, and I do, I think it's just a slump. I think they're going to come in as a focused, angry team and lay the wood.
But you would have thought they would have been as to me, it's not about motivation and focus. It's just about, are you good enough? Can you adjust to what defenses are doing?
And they're not good enough to whip up.
They weren't last week.
I thought the Eagles took care of them. The Eagles' offense took care of the Rams' defense, too, in the red zone with powerful runs. Wendell Smallwood scored. They took care of business. They were the tougher team. They got penetration up the middle, and that play where Jared Goff got stepped on, trips, jumps up to his feet and throws one of the worst interceptions we've seen all year. Like, this Rams team is not typically on their heels and looking sort of lost, and they have for two straight weeks.
This little statistical nug from Next Gen Stats. Jared Goff has been pressured at least 12 times in each of the Rams games since their bye week in week 12. They're 1-2 in that stretch. He has a horrible passer rating under pressure of just 3.9. That's a huge reason why.
I like the Sean McVay versus the Steve Wilkes matchup here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that worried. I'm a little worried.
And don't forget, the Rams also, they're getting pushed now by the Bears, who are 10-4. They're still in the mix for a bye, and you know they're going to take care of business. You know, they have the San Francisco 49ers on the road. Now, of course, the Seahawks thought they were going to take care of business, Mark Sessler, when they went to San Francisco. Didn't work out that way last week. But the Bears, with that defense, they should be able to handle their business here.
They're so consistent, and there's such a disparity between these two defenses. Statistically, it's almost shocking that the Bears lead the NFL with 35 takeaways with 8 games where they've had 3 or more. And the Niners, and I don't know when the last time this has happened, have 5 all season and only 1 at home. And I think the difference between what happened last week to Seattle, which I don't see happening against the Bears, is there was a lot of yards after the catch with Selleck had a long score. They got multiple guys open, and that's been 50% of Nick Mullins' yardage have come through yards after the catch. And so I trust the Bears to clamp down on that. They only allow 2 red zone opportunities per game on the road. That's by far the best in the NFL right now. And they're the same team every week. And I know Mitch Trubisky, I saw this thing that he hasn't had. He's had 1 pass of 20 plus air yards since he's come back from his shoulder, so they're not going deep with that, but I don't know if that's sort of just like with each week he'll get a little healthier and we might see more of that, but they're going to be fine.
Well, the 49ers D's improved. You know, they've won 2 games in a row here at home. They're 4-3 at home on the year. They've been a terrible road team, but they just beat the Broncos and the Seahawks back to back. DeForest Buckner's coming off a good game, and the Mullins, some of the Nick Mullins stats are a little wild. I'm going to give you one.
Sure.
Here are the 5 quarterbacks in NFL history with a higher yards per attempt average as rookies. Otto Graham, Greg Cook, Bob Waterfield, Ben Roethlisberger, and Y.A. Tittle. That's the list! And he's undrafted! He's already started more games, by the way, than any undrafted rookie ever, and any undrafted quarterback this decade other than Hoyer and Keenum.
Has he started more games in his career than Jimmy Garoppolo at this point?
No, but it's like not that
close.
It's not that crazy. And Garoppolo, yeah. I mean, you could then say Kyle Shanahan.
I don't think he's at that level.
Right. But Kyle Shanahan, oh, wow, this guy knows how to coach up a quarterback. Well, Garoppolo was struggling before he went down. He was a middle of the road type quarterback. This guy Mullins, he can
I'm just giving it. I just want to give him some credit. He's decisive. He makes some really good throws under pressure, and yeah, he's going to have to do that again against the Bears.
He was a record setter at Southern Miss, which also produced Brett Favre. So you know,
did it?
Yes,
I have not heard that.
Yes. But this week it's the Bears. It's the Bears being a defense that can finally figure out how to stop George Kittle before halftime.
I do want to see Trubisky in the offense put in another good performance and go upwards. I do think he will, and that's why I'm locking up the team of ACL once again.
All right, and keep in mind, Greg, that and I know you know this because you're the calculator man when it comes to playoff scenarios. The Bears, they only have to catch the Rams. They don't have to surpass them because of that 15-6 win 2 weeks ago. The first tiebreaker is head-to-head, and the Bears have it. So if they can just catch up one more game, they are the 2 seed and get the bye.
And if you're a fan of integrity in Week 17 games, you really want that scenario to stay alive, Dan, where the Bears have a chance to pass the Rams.
Give it to me.
Because Bears-Vikings is Week 17, and you want the Bears to be trying in that game. And you have to wonder, with Matt Nagy's history under Andy Reid, who loves sitting players, and the fact that the Bears would be staring at no bye week, whether they would rest their starters if they're mathematically out of the bye going into that game. But I don't think that'll happen, because I think the Bears will win. I think the Rams will win, and it'll all stay alive.
Let's move on. The Steelers, 8-5-1, coming off the biggest win of their season. That home triumph against the Patriots got that stand deep in their own end at the end of the game and kept their playoff hopes and their AFC North title hopes alive and well. They now travel to the Saints. Can you even imagine what would happen? Mark, I knew you were imagining it. Shook, you were imagining it. If the Steelers did not close out that Pats game and then they had to go to New Orleans, they would have been in great, great danger. So there's a little bit of a reprieve for them now. But still, the Saints, Nick Shook, are a dominant team. Maybe not an offense right now, but the defense has been carrying the ball lately.
This is a game where I want to see what the Saints can do through the air, because they haven't done much in the last couple weeks, but the Steelers don't have a great pass defense. Now, Joe Hayden had a clutch interception last week, but overall, when you're playing a guy like Artie Burns back there, you're just not going to be that solid, and you know, your backup is Cody Sensabaugh. I mean, they have issues back there, and I think this is a Saints team that we know lacks some reliable targets outside of Michael Thomas, and
has where are they at?
Attempted to address that, and I think this is the week where they'd start to really figure it out going into the postseason with a team that could be a good test.
I never thought there'd be a time where a Super Bowl contender was entering the playoffs, and my big thought that they needed was, God, they need Ted Ginn back. Yep. Like, that's the missing piece that can put them over to the top to win a Super Bowl. But it kind of feels that way, and they're hoping Ted Ginn maybe does come off IR, because they need that deep speed. Everyone thought it was cute when they had 4 undrafted, you know, rookie free agents catch
adorable.
A touchdown pass in the same game. None of those guys have done anything in the 3 weeks since.
No. I mean, then the good thing is their defense has become one of the best in the entire league. Not bad timing.
No, I think this is my favorite game of the week. I mean, these are two teams I think have a chance to make the Super Bowl. I put the Steelers in that class, and I just want to see like what the Steelers can do coming off that win. Maybe they can kind of figure things out and get it together.
And I'm all in on the Saints. I don't want to see them slip here and then potentially lose home field.
TJ
wants them to be home throughout.
TJ Watt's the key. When he rushes, they have a pack, because Bud Dupree is a huge disappointment, but when you add Watt to the defensive line that they have, then they're so dangerous, and we don't know about the Saints offensive line and their health right now, and that's been a big reason why they've struggled.
The Steelers are going to again be without James Conner. This high ankle sprain is doing what high ankle sprains tend to do when they're when they're serious, which is cost a guy a month or more. Jalen Samuels, who ran all over the Patriots, but that was the Patriots. I'd be very surprised if he had another outing like that.
Yes, especially against the way this run defense is going. Sheldon Rankins and Mario Davis. And how about a little love for Von Bell playing his ass off this year?
Not Le'Veon Bell.
Not Le'Veon Bell. Von Bell.
He's sitting on his ass. Le'Veon. Von Bell.
Update.
Kicking some ass.
Part of an Ohio State defense.
Let's pick this game. Does anybody think the Steelers can win?
I do. I think the Steelers are going to win this game. I do.
I think the Saints, I mean, I think it couldn't be any closer, but I'm going to give the Saints a 27 to 24.
I have like this image. This could be a Super Bowl preview even. See this one again.
Interesting.
Saints by 10. No.
I'm like the last person in America that believes in the Steelers. Steelers
you also picked them to not make the playoffs too.
I'm sorry.
No.
I can't get on board.
I mean,
none of it makes
sense. I think that was a potentially season-altering win for the Steelers against the Patriots, where not only did they kind of get back on track, they realized their potential. They can win a big game, and they will not crumble down the stretch, and I think this will be highly competitive.
They're so ripe to have a they're so ripe to crumble over the next couple weeks. I guarantee you they will.
Okay. Ooh, I like that.
Let's track that.
Lock it up.
On. That would be a great lockup, by the way, if you think they're ripe to crumble.
What, take the Saints?
Yeah.
Happily take the Saints. Switch my lock.
Don't blame me, though.
No, I don't care.
Okay. Well, you got the magic right.
I might switch it to the Bears before we're done, too. I like that lock. That was
about 10 minutes left.
I mean, it's not a bad – the numbers would say you just switched to a much heavier favorite, so it worked out well for you. Right, the Saints?
It worked well to
beat – I don't remember
what you were before. I was the Chargers.
Oh, yeah. If I were you, I'd take the Saints anyways compared to
– There you go.
Not that I know.
Good job, Mark.
I'm tempted to switch it to the Bears, too. So let's
Greg, who's in last place, though, is saying that was a great job by you. You're a little worried about that.
Ooh. I mean, I'm not going to listen to any of this psychological warfare streaming over my way from Greg during any of this.
I promise you I'm not sending any warfare about the locks.
This is the Kansas City Chiefs.
You want Chuck to win the whole thing. What are you talking about?
The Kansas City Chiefs are, I don't know. It's right on the line, I think.
No.
The Kansas City Chiefs, 29-28. They fell in crushing fashion to the rival Chargers at home. It was a costly loss, but they still are in good position in the AFC. But here is another tough battle, Greg. Now they got to go to Seattle to face the Seahawks. And if there was a team that had a loss that you could put in a similar category in terms of heartbreaking, regrets, filled with regrets, it is the Seahawks, who could not find a way to beat the Niners of all teams. So here you go. Here's another great game this week. This might be my favorite game of the week. How about that, Greg?
Yeah, and that makes sense because seeing Patrick Mahomes go up to Seattle, another test for this Chiefs team that I thought is overall the best team in the league and the best, certainly the best offense in the league still. I think the Seahawks defense has been, I wouldn't say overrated, but it's not a defense I think is going to be able to stop Kansas City, period. The best part of their defense right now is up front with Puna Ford and Jerron Reed are playing really well, stopping the run. But, I don't know if the Chiefs are going to run the ball that much. And I do think you're going to see the best of Patrick Mahomes and that they're in a different class of teams, even when they're going to Seattle.
Little concern. Sammy Watkins is not going to play in this game. And they have Chris Conley, but there's not a lot of depth happening behind Tyreek Hill at this point, but they find other ways to get it done. I'm with you. I think the Seahawks gave up a few too many big plays to the Niners last week, and so now what are you dealing with Kansas City?
I'm with you, Greg, as well, but I do really want to see how the Seahawks play against a team like Kansas City because they've been a team that has either played up to their competition or down to their competition for the majority of the season. I wasn't a big fan of them going into this year, and they've been a pleasant surprise, so this is one of those games that could be entertaining.
It's a huge game, I think, for the MVP. If Mahomes plays well in Seattle, I just feel like he's had the season, and that kind of puts an exclamation point on it. But if he struggles or, they lose and don't score many points and Rivers does something Saturday, then I think it's, like, wide open.
Well, in that last game we talked about, if Breeze knocks out the Steelers, that he's right there too.
Yeah, that's true. Justin Houston's really coming on. I mean, that's why I'm not that worried about the Chiefs' defense. If they can get a little more snaps out of Eric Berry, who returned last week and did okay.
They're second in sacks and eighth in takeaways. Like, their defense makes plays.
They have three really good players in their front seven with Chris Jones, D. Ford, and Justin Houston. And if they can get the help in the back end, I think they could turn into a good defense.
And I did have a panicked Seahawks fan tweet me, say, please tell me, what are the chances that my team loses out? You'll be all right. Don't worry. I know it was tough last week, and the Chiefs, you could get popped there, but the schedule gods gave you a nice little cupcake. Cardinals in your building in week 17. Win that game, you're playing in January.
What cupcake on the cupcake wall are the Cardinals?
I think they're the tastiest cupcake there is.
I mean, on the road in week 17, after, like, there's probably pregame reports that Wilkes is already, is on the door, that's the bags are packed. How about a little Tyreek Hill versus the poor man's Tyreek Hill, Tyler Lockett? who I think is about as close to Tyreek Hill as there is in the NFL right now, is having such an awesome season and is so important for them.
And just to back me up, Greg, you are the playoff calculator. They win, just get to 9 wins, the Seahawks are gone.
Now, there is a sequence. I wish I could. I wish I had it prepared.
Damn.
Because if the Vikings,
if you're listening to the show, sir.
Right.
All right, hang in there. It could get bumpy.
If the Vikings win out, if the Vikings win out and the Eagles, no, I guess I think they still would knock out. I think they're okay.
Okay. Well, if you're listening to the show, you're all good. Finally, Monday Night Football, Christmas Eve. Hang up the stockings. You know, get the turkey. The Christmas ham, is it? Yes, Christmas. I never had that when I was a kid, but some people like to have the ham.
I don't get ham. Like, even back when I would eat all these trays of food, like, the ham is not the tastiest addition.
In the
Well, you don't like meat, right?
No, but I mean, as a child, I did up until ham was introduced occasionally, just unappealing.
Largely. See, I was a big fan of ham as a kid, but I'm now a ham-to-turkey convert.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah, and I'm proud to say it.
And it's good for the muscle mass as well.
Of course, yes, lean protein.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, roasted beast, it's referred to. So while people are prepping their roasted beast and getting ready for the beautiful holiday that is Christmas, you also have the opportunity to watch the 6-8 Denver Broncos going nowhere, losers of two straight, against the 3-11 Oakland Raiders, also going nowhere, losers of 3-4. Mark, do you have anything to say? I know you're going to be watching this game on Christmas Eve while your family gets excited with Santa on the way.
I will not be watching it, but I will be watching to see what happens with Vance Joseph, because there are now reports, and this has been going back and forth all year. This is coming from Greg's former employer, Pro Football Talk, and Mike Florio released this report that Vance Joseph is essentially expected to be let go, that we're going there, but he does leave the caveat that Elway might change his mind, but it sure seems like.
So is that a report? Or like, what is that report?
I mean, I'm just putting it out there as a report.
So Florio says that John Elway thinks he's going to fire the head coach unless he changes his mind before, I guess.
I mean, a lot of things
Monday.
Could happen under that umbrella of thinking.
It's tricky because these guys, and Tom Pelissero had a report earlier this week, we talked about that both coordinators are expected to be gone in Atlanta. And you get the sense, you have these sources, but it's like they have job. Vance Joseph has a job for the next 2 weeks, and these guys have jobs for the next 2 weeks, and I don't know if they're cautioned to make it as soft as possible. I don't know. Mm. It's weird.
Yeah, it's tough.
How can you really report something's going to happen in 2 weeks? I guess you can.
I guess that's the job, though.
Because the whole world could change.
That's true.
You can't be too firm. I mean, a team could get obliterated or something. Who knows?
All right.
Mass, you know, hysteria could overtake the land.
Absolutely.
Cancel those games for Mark.
All right, so that's it. The show, the next time you'll hear us, is Sunday night. It will be our recap show, December 20th. Some people go into Operation Shutdown around this time of the calendar. No. We will continue to grind. We will be here for you after the Week 16 Sunday games. Nick, thank you for your helping us out. Pinch hitting. Mm. Beautiful. Are you going to replace Wes? I don't think so. And unless there's massive public outcry, and even then, I think our support for Wes would win out and Wes would remain on the show. But even if it's not going to lead to a coup, you did great work.
Listen, you know, I came in, I gave my best effort, and at the end of the day, it's hard to take the seat of Michael Jordan.
Wow. Yeah.
He's the GOAT.
And like, for all the listeners that are wondering, hey, if you're doing your recap show Sunday night, what about that Raiders-Broncos game? We're actually going to tweet out Nick's personal cell phone number, and you can just call him throughout the holiday season,
that's right.
And he'll give you a 3-minute recap of that game just over the phone.
Better you than the robocalls.
Okay. That's right. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. This is Dan Hansis signing off for The Quiet Storm. Shook, get you pump in. The Old Boss and Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Until Sunday night.
Into every state we have, and I think that I'm inclined to say that Rhodey stole my heart. You can keep the 49. Herring gulls that dot the sky, blue waves that paint the rocks. water rich with Neptune's life, the boats that line the docks. I see the lighthouse flickering to help the sailors see. There's a place for everyone. Rhode Island's it for me. Rhode Island, oh Rhode Island, surrounded by the sea. Some people roam the earth for home. Rhode Island.